This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
I think there was once a movie called Cars, Trains and Automobiles. It was one of those comedies. Cars and automobiles. That's what we're talking about today. Cars and automobiles. Those that are assembled, manufactured in South Africa, turning the manufacturing sector into a very critical part of the South African economy. Broadly speaking, the automotive industry has contributed nearly 5% to the South African economy. 5%, of which almost 3% is the actual manufacturing side of the economy, and just over 2% being the retail. So when we're talking about services and retail, they are there. When we're talking about manufacturing and production, they are there. And overall, very critical to skills transfer and job creation for the country. And in years before the COVID-19 pandemic, when there weren't supply chain constraints and we weren't having stage six load shedding, the automotive industry was contributing upwards of 6.4%, almost 7%. And it's perhaps one of the reasons why the automotive industry has had many kind of protections around it to ensure that the jobs that are there, as best as is possible, can be kept safe. And it's also where we've also seen a lot of investment pledges. You know, when the president talks about there's 1 billion coming in from Ford and this amount, those are pledges coming in from the automotive sector. But people say, no, it was already money budgeted for. It was already part of those companies' strategic objectives. Well, whatever you may think, the fact is that the automakers still believe in South Africa, still invest in South Africa, still bring in great expertise into South Africa. And some of the sleekest, most beautiful cars that are on the roads of New York City, Shanghai, Lagos and Johannesburg and Port Louis were made in South Africa. And that is a true story. And because of that, because of what the automotive industry represents in terms of showcasing what South Africa has to offer, we have to protect it. We have to make sure that whatever's going on wrong in South Africa doesn't taint what is right in South Africa. Renee Muthleal is the executive director of the National Association of the Automotive Component and Allied Manufacturers, and he joins us now. Renee, good morning.
Lerato, good morning. And that was such a brilliant introduction. I really enjoyed listening to it, and I really look forward to the conversation. So morning to you and your listeners.
Thank you. And, you know, I never want to mispronounce people's names. So Renee Muthleal.
Renee, you had it right the first time. Muthleal. Yeah, you got it.
Thank you so much. Okay, so let's just remind us why I've said what I've said about the automotive industry in South Africa. The numbers support the introduction, but give us a more crystallized view of what is going on there that works so well.
Yeah, I think the auto sector in South Africa is probably the best example we've had in a post-democratic era of proper coordinated industrial policy leading to economic development in our country. You touched on a few of the key kind of economic outcomes, employment, skills transfer, technology development, investment, exports and the exchange benefits out of all of that. I think the South African sector is a really good example of how manufacturing as a whole can be coordinated and supported by state and private sector players to the long-term benefit of our economy.
Okay, so
the numbers you spoke about absolutely bear that out.
So what you're saying is this is an example where social compact, everybody talks about a social compact. So this is an informal social compact. Labor is in tandem, business is in tandem, government and policy is in tandem. When you're all pursuing the right ideal, it works.
Absolutely. And I think key being here is that of the many different sectors in South Africa, autos was the first to develop and implement a fairly long-term industrial master plan. We've got the SA Autos Master Plan mandated up until the year 2035 with a range of policy and supporting measures. And that supportive environment has been, like I said, in existence from in its current format, the post-democratic era. But autos has been produced in South Africa for almost 100 years and probably an equally long history of the state supporting and championing this sector. And by the way, that's no different to anywhere else in the world. Mm. Most emerging economies that have autos industry have very strong levels of state support.
Okay, so what, you know, when we were introducing this segment at the show, at the start of the show, I said the things that I said, and then somebody tweeted, oh, Lerato, get over it. We are merely assembling cars. Don't, you know, amplify this manufacturing element as if South Africa is producing something. We're merely assembling cars. What do you say to that?
Yeah, look, okay. So an element of nuance behind that statement, I think it's a, we must be constructive in our thinking about the sector. The comment probably comes from the fact that our levels of local content and localization or procurement of local components, which is the constituency I represent, could be better. It's an absolute fact. We are at localization levels of below 40%. Global benchmarks of truly competitive economies say that you should get up to 60% of your localization happening in the country where vehicles are assembled. Having said that, we know the sector has faced immense challenges over the last decade, and that we still have a strong base of assembly is something that we can further leverage. And I think that's the objectives behind the master plan and why we've got a target of 60% localization.
So explain to us what localization would mean. It would mean that you are using suppliers who are South African, using made in South African inputs. And yet the core components of a car, the steel, the catalytic converters, those kinds of things, those fiber doors, a lot of those aren't really made in South Africa.
Yeah, so I think localization in the autos context is simply the sum, a vehicle is the sum of its parts, and we want more parts produced in South Africa. Whether the companies are purely South African owned, whether they're multinational, all of that is a secondary discussion point. The most important thing is that the value addition, the conversion of the steel into a component, the conversion of plastics into a component, all of that creates the opportunities for economic growth in the country. And I think that's where the comment would have come from. Absolutely, we want to see more localization happen in South Africa.
So it's not like South Africa started producing cars last year. It's an industry that's more than 30 years old by way of vehicle assembly. So what in that time frame has delayed this value addition, beneficiation, and starting to increase the composition of local supply?
So I think sometimes it's just been probably unfortunate coincidences. If we look at South Africa's localization growth levels in the latter parts of the first decade, the 2000s, it was starting to grow quite well. And as it was really primed to take off as we went into what is now known as the APDP policy period, the assumptions that some of those growth targets were based on just didn't happen because of the economic crisis of 2008, 2009, which really, really put the sector back. And what it meant was the levels of government support were effectively used to maintain the assembly base that we have, but OEMs were not really incentivized or pushed in some way to grow their domestic procurement. I think a really important thing to understand for listeners is decisions about procuring components or systems for any vehicle don't necessarily happen in the country where the vehicle is being assembled. They will happen at an assembler's headquarter level, so maybe in Stuttgart or in Tokyo, wherever it may be. So because of the global nature of production, often you find that Thailand may have excess capacity for a component that they're producing. And because of scale, it's easier to import that into our country and use it for assembly. But yeah, I think it's a key objective of the government, and many of the policies that are now in place are definitely focused towards greater localization. if we are able to surmount some of the immediate challenges on our doorsteps, I mean, you guys know about the kind of immediate industrial action situation with the ports and the like.
Yes.
If we get through all of that, I am still confident that there's a positive long-term view for localization.
Okay, so we're going to ask you to, we're going to allow you to please get yourself a cup of water, and then we'll be back as we talk about the actual constraints that are facing the manufacturing industry.
Getting you what you need to know. Power Talk. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
This is Economy Tuesday, and we're talking about a sector of the economy that has really been a bedrock for South Africa. It's been a job creator. It's been where we've seen a lot of technological innovation. And it's also been where a lot of the investment pledges that we hear about have come through. And not just pledges, but money's actually rolled out and deployed as these auto manufacturers advance their strategies in South Africa. We've been talking about the importance of the original equipment manufacturing area of the business, where when you know how to create component parts locally, then you can start to have more and more suppliers coming into the value chain, and that's become a priority for automakers across South Africa. We're in conversation with Rene Mutlial, who is the Executive Director of the National Association of the Automotive Component and Allied Manufacturers Industry. And just for numbers, if you missed the conversation earlier on, in the COVID world, the auto manufacturing industry makes up nearly 5% of GDP. And that's a slight decline because of COVID and supply chains from nearly 7% of GDP. So this is a very critical part of the South African economy. Okay, so Eskom, let's talk about that, Rene. By now, I'm sure automakers can generate their own electricity, but it's definitely not a good look when the lights keep going on and off and adding to the cost of business.
Yeah, I think right now the electricity situation and load shedding is probably the biggest constraint to long-term growth of the sector. You're probably right. Some of the big automaking plants can either be generating their own power or are being prioritized by virtue of in the municipality they are designated as areas that are protected from load shedding. Having said that, the supplier base is so big and diverse and spread across different parts of the industrial economy of South Africa that you're unable to have that kind of solution widespread. And you know this, you can't assemble 99% of a car. If there's one supplier that's impacted somewhere and everyone else has power, you still stop the assembly line. Mm. So for me, I think this is really the most crucial constraint right now. And it's not always feasible for some of the smaller manufacturers to be investing in self-generation. It then throws their competitiveness of pricing out of the window.
Okay, so even they'd be affected. The smaller SMEs in the sector would be affected by load shedding, is what you're saying.
I think the bigger impact would be found with smaller companies. Mm. It's easier for big companies to mitigate.
Yeah. Okay. And let's talk about industrial action. You referred to the industrial action at the Transnet port, and many big companies are coming out now saying this is the final nail in the coffin for them. From the logistics companies to the mining sector, they're saying this is it. South Africa, get yourselves together. We can't continue like this. So what does industrial action at a Transnet, for instance, mean for the automotive sector? But even outside of Transnet, whenever members of the sector have gone on strike, it's literally crippled production for up to a month or two.
Yeah. Look, I think let's start with your closing one. The sector itself has at least over the last three negotiating periods emerged without industrial action. So I think probably from around 2014 or so, we haven't had a major strike in the sector, which is a positive. However, we are literally in the middle of trying to finalize this year's rolling three-year agreement, and if anything, we're looking for responsibility in closing that out, and in no way wanting to look to any industrial action within the sector itself. Mm-hmm. The happenings in Transnet, I can't amplify any better what you said. It is really, it's so crucial that we get out of this industrial action space that is hampering the logistics networks. Autos is a global business. Components come in, vehicles leave, vehicles come in, components are exported. I mean, you didn't mention this. Last year, in a post-COVID environment, component exports were at record levels of 67 billion rand. Mm. This year, if there's strikes in the ports, we're not going to be able to do that.
And then, of course, last year there was also the issue of the aftermath of COVID-19, which created serious supply chain constraints because China being in lockdown for close on to 6 months meant that a major trade port for these components and electronics and microchips couldn't get to the factories on time. So has the sector recovered from the COVID restrictions and limitations or not?
I do think there are still some elements of supply chain restrictions which are still feeding into South Africa's domestic autos production. We are seeing increased costs for example, air freight, where companies have been struggling with sea freight because of port issues that you're talking about. Actual material and subcomponent supply, I mean, you talked about the microchips. It is still an issue. Seems to be working itself out of the system, but I can say for sure Q4 last year and Q1 and 2 this year heavily impacted, and we're still feeling some of the brunt of it.
So in a perfect world where there's no COVID and where China's working really well and the ships are sailing the seas and the necessary component parts are getting to where they need to get to, the factories around the world, the issue of competitiveness comes in. And there's a lot of talk about the African Continental Free Trade Area and, you know, what Africa can leverage. And there's this talk of how African countries, when coordinated properly, can turn African nations into the new factories of the world, because China having developed now at the level it's at means that labor costs are very, very expensive. It's not so cheap to run a factory in China. They've tried to migrate to Vietnam. It's also getting expensive. And so this is what Africa can leverage. Young people who are ready to work, who are able to work, who are not going to be very expensive as labor, and using these factories as a springboard to development locally, but to creating new markets for the sector. So what's being done to really bring that to pass?
Yeah, so I think there's a few things happening. In the main, the creation and implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Area is a positive, at least from a sector-specific framework. Stakeholders, both public and private, are looking to work with other governments across the African continent to develop some level of industrial partnership pact, which kind of premises our relationships with other African countries on supporting production in those economies. I think part of the reason why the African continent hasn't realized its full economic potential in terms of market development is many people still look at it as trade-based. And as a sector, we're now saying, let's have an industrial base, let's grow actual nodes of production across the continent and have value chains develop and cooperate as a result of that. That happened really well in Southeast Asia. If you look around Thailand and their kind of geographic supporting economies there, it's a kind of model that if we get right in terms of African industrial partnership is definitely one of the factors for positive long-term growth of South Africa and the wider African automotive sector.
And then when we bring it back home and say, how can this sector help to solve for the jobs crisis that we have? Because this is one sector, if you're getting very big orders from across the world, then you're building more factories and you can employ more people. But something hasn't quite happened in that way, where, for instance, I know that with BMW, for instance, there was a time where they wanted to expand and bring in new models. But then with industrial action and electricity outages, they changed those plans and moved new factories to places like Mexico because South Africa was proving to be difficult. So how can we get it right for young people to leverage opportunities?
So there's a couple of things. You've touched on some of the macro factors, and I think everyone knows what they are. I'm not going to harp on it. Those things essential. Let's get them right. But a word that we used earlier will quickly answer how, and that is increased localization. Localization both from OEMs to what they call their tier one supplier base, which is really big in South Africa. Mm-hmm. But even those tier ones themselves need to procure more materials, more subcomponents from smaller SMME tier two type companies, which is where we've struggled over the last 20 years. There's been a lot of hollowing out in that space. Those are really going to be the drivers of employment, the drivers of new business creation, transformation, youth employment. it really has to happen in the supplier base, and it's got to be what we call deep localization. Mm-hmm. That's going to unlock all of the opportunities, and we've got to fervently pursue that.
And just in a sentence, for anybody who says, I'm studying some kind of engineering or technical craft, I would like to work there, what are the real skills needed in the automotive sector?
I think it's so diverse. It's technical. It's financial. I mean, one of the things that I think South Africa's got a really good opportunity based on its kind of materials strength is to start entering some of the R&D spaces of the new technologies that we're starting to see permeate the autos economy. Okay. And I think there's scope across the board.
Okay, well, we'll continue this conversation with Nyari Samushonga, the CEO of We Think Code, because I think some of these coders are going to find themselves working with people like you, Renee Mutlial, who's the Executive Director of the National Association of the Automotive Component and Allied Manufacturers.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.